I'm Scott.
I'm Bill.
And we're the Trade Guys.
You're listening to The Trade Guys, a podcast produced by CSIS where we talk about trade in terms that everyone can understand. I'm H. Andrew Schwartz, and I'm here with Scott Miller and Bill Reinsch, the CSIS Trade Guys. Coming up on the next episode of The Trade Guys, we'll talk TikTok and what went down in the House this week. Plus, we'll talk about Nippon Steel, all on the next episode of The Trade Guys.
Trade Guys, we are back, and this is an exciting week in Washington for a variety of reasons, one of which is TikTok has been at the forefront of debate. The House took some action. They passed a bill that would ban TikTok over national security reasons. Now it goes to the Senate. What about this bill, guys? What are the security issues that lawmakers are really attempting to get at here? Especially, you know, a lot of these lawmakers themselves use TikTok to campaign.
Well, including the Biden administration.
Right.
Just open an account. I don't think time's up for TikTok quite yet. The Senate has been a little bit more ambiguous in its reaction than the House has. The two big allegations that have been made about it, I mean, to respond to your question directly, are that the data that TikTok obtains from noting what you're watching, what you're linking on to, your location, all the kinds of things that you get via, particularly via accessing it on your phone, that data can be used in two bad ways. One is that it would allow, on the assumption that it ultimately goes to the Chinese government, which TikTok denies, but that's the assumption is that that's what's going on or could go on, that it would allow the Chinese then to obtain information about you or all of us that could be used for nefarious purposes, blackmail primarily. I think that's probably more relevant if the president were on TikTok and they were scraping data about him or about other highly placed officials.
Well, but I'm isn't sure. The president now on TikTok?
Well, yes, that's a good point. But where I was going, I'm not sure the Chinese, I mean, no offense, Andrew, I'm not sure the Chinese care about you or me quite so much, or Scott.
I am not on TikTok, and they definitely don't care about us.
Well, there you go. And let's keep it that way. Anyway, that the data could be used for nefarious purposes. The other argument is that it could be used as an influencing device, that, in fact, that there's some evidence to suggest that it already is, in the sense that what is allowed to appear on it can be skewed. There's been some analysis done, and people have noted, you know, comparing TikTok to other platforms, Facebook in particular, or Instagram, there are notably fewer short videos about the Uyghurs, about Hong Kong, about human rights in China, about anything that might embarrass the Chinese regime on TikTok than there are on other platforms. And so that has led people to say, it can be a censorship tool so that people who use it, and an increasing number of people, particularly young people, are getting their news from TikTok. So, if we had this conversation 5 years ago, it would all be about teenagers watching dance videos. But now it's much more sophisticated than that, and people get their news out of it. And one argument is they're getting tilted news. The other relevant argument is that it's also a push opportunity, that it would be an opportunity for Chinese push propaganda out in the form of videos or AI things that are invented or developed, and that they could massively influence the U.S. population. I mean, one of the ironies of that is that, it's been played both ways, which is what makes this debate so interesting. When the bill was announced, which was only, a week or so ago, TikTok encouraged all of its listeners to contact their House members and complain. And apparently thousands and thousands did. And one set of people has said that that's proof that the Chinese can use the TikTok to influence outcomes. The other side has pointed out that it did absolutely no good, and that if anything, it backfired, and the bill passed with a more than two-thirds majority in the House. So it's a little bit hard to say that their first overt influence effort was successful. Their first overt influence effort was a dismal failure. People, you know, security people debate the relevance of it. I don't think there's any dispute. And we've been through, this is the world of could again, which we've talked about before. People don't debate that the things I just said could happen.
Can I read you something that our colleague James Andrew Lewis wrote?
Yes, I've seen that. It's brilliant. So read it.
So this is, everyone should read this. It's at front and center on our homepage, but I want to read you some from it right now. So Jim talks about how the recent legislation in the House highlights the discussion of national security risks from the use of TikTok, and it identifies three potential sources of danger. The first, Jim says, is that TikTok's part of a nefarious Chinese government influence operation designed to sway U.S. politics. The second is that TikTok can be used to collect personal data on Americans. The third is that voluntary downloading TikTok onto phones or devices allows for the injection of malicious software by China. And Jim goes on to say, and I quote, only the third source creates serious risk. How about that?
You know, I first of all, Jim's brilliant, and I think he makes excellent points. I also think he's identified the one thing we probably should stop about this, which is the malware. And it's long been believed that TikTok is basically a source of malware masquerading as a video platform. Okay, so that's been known. This is something that has happened throughout our history. You know, you'll remember the student movements of the 1960s and 70s were heavily infiltrated by Soviet communist organizations and funded by them to some extent. Okay, foreign interference is not unusual. Our country has a First Amendment, and I look at the Bill of Rights in general as a list of things that were too important to leave to dummies in the Congress to mess with. Okay, and that includes Congress shall make no law to interfere with the freedom of speech or to abridge the freedom of speech. Yeah, the lobbying effort did know to it, but the lobbying is also a First Amendment right. And so, first, I don't think Congress has thought this through. Second, politicians always want to censor their opponents. They always do. You go back to John Adams and the Alien and Sedition Act, and censorship is really popular when you're a powerful legislator. You want to do it, and we've always had a First Amendment that stands in the way. Third, I don't think this will stop at TikTok if we apply it to TikTok. And the reason I say that, it's going to be heard in arguments Monday before the Supreme Court. There's a case called Murphy versus Missouri, which is a First Amendment case, and it is about the extent to which, during the pandemic, a lot of government officials from the White House on down and a lot of three-letter agencies involved censored American speech on internet platforms. And so the case is going to be argued on a number of grounds, but the record of this happening is undisputed, right? So look, we've got to choose what we're about here. I'm completely skeptical that Congress will stop at TikTok, but I do agree with Jim on the malware, and that's worth a technological hard look at how we stop.
I mean, the only thing I'd say about that is that's not the only source of malware.
Any app you download, you undertake
the risk of malware. If it's greater in TikTok, then he's got a point. I agree with him also that I think the other two risks are exaggerated. I mean, the problem with the argument is it impossible to use it as an influencing device? No, it's not impossible. But is it a serious concern? Is it likely to happen? I don't think so. I think, as I've said in speeches, that of all the things we have to worry about in security, this is like number 34 on the list. But the other way to look at it, though, is different the way we've been talking about it, which is as a tactical move. I mean, the bill is not a flat-out ban. The bill says that they have to sell it to a domestic party in 6 months. And if they don't, then app stores won't be able to carry it, and presumably you won't be able to download it. So it amounts to a bad episode.
So they're telling the company they've got to sell a multi-billion-dollar product within 6 months.
Well, yes, I think the value, the company valuation that I saw was $300 billion. So it's not going to go cheap. But at the same time, I think probably one of the conversations they were having in the House when this was going on was, you know, CFIUS, the Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States, which has a hook on this, has been negotiating with ByteDance, the TikTok parent, on this subject for more than 2 years without a lot of progress. And I think some people would say the point of this bill is to hurry up the process. It's basically to tell CFIUS, get going, that there is a win-win outcome here, that if you do sell it to an American entity, TikTok users win because it doesn't go away, and the Americans win because it's not Chinese. I mean, you can argue about whether that's possible, but some people would argue that the point of the bill is not going to pass the Senate. It's not going to be enacted into law. The point is to jumpstart what is the negotiations that are already going on and squeeze ByteDance into some kind of a settlement. It's apparent from what's been going on that ByteDance doesn't want to sell. I don't think I would either if I were making as much money as I assume they're making off of it. And Andrew is right. The valuation of the company is such that there aren't a lot of buyers out there that are going to be able to afford that.
Right.
So it may end up being a ban, but I'm not sure that that was the sole intent.
So what is the Chinese reaction to this, and what do you guys make of it?
Well, they're upset. I mean, they've been upset from the beginning, to the surprise of no one. They've been upset from the beginning. They don't think we should mess with their companies.
They think we're bullying them, correct?
We are bullying them. That's what they think. And of course, they deny doing anything nefarious.
No.
As has ByteDance. There was one incident, I think only one so far, at least public, where the company admitted that an employee had mistakenly, inadvertently, erroneously, choose your adverb, transferred TikTok data back to the parent in China. The claim is that was, I think, one-off. I mean, I don't believe it. I think it's far more credible that the data is being passed, and I think it's legitimate for the Congress to assume that. But that takes us back to Jim Lewis's paper. Even so, what? I mean, how bad is that? And I think that you make a good point that the malware download issue may be the most serious of the problems.
So do you guys think TikTok's actually likely to sell, and what will happen if they don't? You've said, and most people expect it won't pass the Senate. Who is going to block it in the Senate?
Rand Paul, for one, but more importantly, getting this through the Senate is much more difficult, floor time's at a premium. They've got lots of other issues to deal with. My sense is that what's going to happen is the fallback will be to let the CFIUS process run and deal with it. It's gotten its headlines. You got a bill through the House, but this is an election year that stuff happens. But let the CFIUS process run, see where it goes in terms of working out legitimate concerns in a constructive way.
The opponents in the House were an odd combination. You know, I was talking to a House staffer who referred to it. I never heard this term, but it's appropriate as the horseshoe effect, which is basically the two ends ganging up in the middle, which we have talked about. I just haven't used that term. If you look at the no votes, there were a lot of Democratic progressives who are concerned, view this as, among other things, as, you know, anti-Asian discrimination and also, I think, a First Amendment issue. And then far-right conservatives who view it as a censorship First Amendment issue. And then also sprinkled in the no votes were a number of what I would call the sane caucus in the House, people that actually understand the technology and evaluated it and thought this was not the right move forward. And you'll see that in the Senate. You'll see all of that in the Senate. I think you've got more people that are moderates to say, wait a minute, this is not the answer. And you've got people on the right like Senator Paul, and you'll probably have people on the left, although they haven't stood up yet, who will resist. And since you need 60 votes in the Senate to move anything, I think that's why I think a lot of people are uncertain. Even Senator Schumer, who was asked about it, declined to endorse the bill and said that he needed to consult with his committee chairman, which is kind of a signal for this is not going to be on a fast track when it gets over there. On the sale question, the thing that was, ByteDance doesn't want to sell. They did seem to indicate, I mean, this is all secret. I know any secrets, but CFIUS doesn't operate in public and they don't have public hearings. So people have to sort of divine what's happening. But it looked like at one point there was almost an agreement. And then I think it was the Justice Department that got in the way and that it kind of collapsed. The issue was control of the data. I think ByteDance was prepared to enter into an arrangement in which somebody other than they controlled the data and made sure that ByteDance couldn't access the data. ByteDance wanted to continue owning the company so they could make all the money. There was at least one company in the early days, Oracle, I think, stepped up and offered to play that role. That then leads you down a different rabbit hole, which is it possible to have have one company own TikTok and another company controlling the data, and then who controls the algorithms, which other people will tell you is really the instrument that would allow the Chinese to gather the data.
Well, we'll have to watch this issue. It's not going away, and it does captivate Americans' interests. There's no question about it. I don't know a person under the age of 25 that's not on it. And I know many people who are up to the age is of 50 and 60 and 70 and on that are also on it. So, you know, this is something that Americans absolutely like, if not love.
Well, you know, one comment about that I think we're going to start thinking about is these things do go in waves.
Yeah.
15 years ago, Facebook was the big thing.
Right.
You know, and anybody under 30 will tell you Facebook is over. And now Instagram, I guess, is the big thing. And that's going to be over. And TikTok is the big thing, too. Well, it'll be over and something else will come along. So people that are saying we're going to have a revolution if we ban TikTok or, you know, what will probably happen is there'll be a lot of complaining, a bunch of people unhappy, and then they'll find another platform.
Could be.
Something new will come along. Yes.
No doubt. All right, guys, let's shift gears a bit and let's talk about one of our favorite issues, Nippon Steel's acquisition of U.S. Steel. Biden administration has concerns. What are those concerns?
Well, if you ask me, their fundamental concern is political. I think this has been a political thing the entire way. Biden is trying to get the steelworkers' endorsement. Steelworkers have indicated they're opposed to this transaction. At the same time, they're talking to Nippon. I mean, they've taken the page from, well, we'll see. They seem to be taking the page from Rich Trumka's book, the former AFL-CIO president, when the U.S.-Canada-Mexico agreement came along. He said, you know, he didn't say it this way, but he said, well, you know, we can be bought. Here's what we want. The deal's no good as it is, but, you know, meet our demands and maybe we'll support it. And basically, they did and he did. And it was win-win. You know, the deal got through with nearly 400 votes in the House, biggest margin of any trade agreement I think that we've signed. Both parties and the AFL-CIO came away with a bunch of things that it considered victories. And in fact, the biggest thing, which was this rapid response mechanism for dealing with labor problems in Mexico, seems to be working and seems to be having results. So it was win-win. If the steelworkers can try that out with Nippon, I'm sure they have a set of demands. I think mostly what they seem to be saying to the company is we want commitments in writing to honor the existing contracts, and that while you have said you will do that, that's not good enough. You know, we want it written down, and we want it written down and I guess signed, sealed, and delivered before we're prepared to talk more, which is kind of backwards, but they don't seem to be making sufficient progress to allow the steelworkers to change their view. So they're against it. The surprise news on March 14th, Pi Day as it happens, was that the president weighed in on this, which I think was a huge mistake. It's a policy mistake, and I think it's also a political mistake because it's premature. And what he said was, what made it a mistake was, I mean, 3 months ago, in December, Lael Brainard said this is a deal that raises lots of issues and it needs to be scrutinized carefully. And if Biden had just said that, I think it would have been fine. But that wasn't what he said. He said the company needs to be run by Americans, American run, American operated, and with American workers, which is not a big deal because, you know, they weren't going to import Japanese workers to work in the steel mill. The question was, you know, but he commented on the ownership. And at this stage, I thought I was surprised. I thought that was unnecessary. And it might end up putting everybody in an awkward position. I mean, it might end up killing off the negotiations, although it, apparently the full statement that he made is not out yet. There's just been part of it released, including the sentence that I just referred to. But apparently the statement also says that he doesn't intend to interfere with the process because they allegedly. But he did. That's exactly what he did.
He just did, but he doesn't intend to.
I was going to ask, is the president allowed to tip the scale?
Let's be clear. Yeah, Bill's absolutely right. At the end of the CFIUS process, there's a presidential decision. Okay, so the president is involved when you have a national security investigation done by the committee. All right, so, and he had, and I agree with Bill, he had been quite presidential by staying away from the issue and starting the investigation and letting the committee, which works strictly on a national security basis, to manage it. But somebody got nervous. Look, this is what happens in politics when you have a close race and you have lots of people weighing in. Here's what you had. Look, you had the underbidder, Cleveland Cliffs, get involved publicly. Now look, Cleveland Cliffs tried to buy U.S. Steel, all right? They had the low offer, number one, so it was bad for the U.S. Steel shareholders. But number two, there's a lot of conflicts in terms of antitrust issues if Cleveland Cliffs were to have acquired it. And so it wasn't the best bid. The best bid was from Nippon Steel, which had many fewer conflicts and is likely to inject new technology into what's otherwise an obsolete or becoming obsolete business. So the best deal for the shareholders and the employees of U.S. Steel was the Nippon Steel acquisition. But that would have sailed, you know, along the path, and the national security questions would have been raised, analyzed, and answered. And then sometime in December or whenever, okay, there was an opportunity for presidential decision. But look, somebody got nervous and they jumped the gun. And so now what you have is vandalism of the CFIUS process. In other words, we now have, instead of an open investment climate here in the United States, we have foreign investment with Chinese characteristics. Okay? So just like the Chi-Coms, we're going to decide politically who gets to invest and who doesn't, which I think is really bad, particularly given the size of the budget deficits we're running. We actually need the money. Look at the national accounts. We need foreign investment in this country, and we are putting our thumb on the scale of a big, high profile one. I don't know why we're doing that. So, but Bill's right. This really comes down to the politics. I don't know how you undo this, but Bill's probably got an idea.
I know Andrew Scott is taking over as rantmeister here. I'm losing.
I love it.
I haven't heard anybody say Chi-Coms in 20 years, Scott.
I know that was pretty. I was a little blown away by that, to be honest.
I know why. It's political. They want steel workers' endorsement.
Sure.
I think they would probably argue that this is a way to put pressure on the company to make the concessions that the union wants, and maybe it'll do that. Maybe it won't. If I were the company, given what Biden said about U.S. Steel needs to be American run, I mean, if I were Nippon, I would say, well, that's kind of a signal that he doesn't want us, so why are we negotiating for something that's going to be turned down anyway? I mean, Scott's right. It really is interference in the process. And I think it exposes the administration potentially to litigation. I mean, the Japanese are not the most litigious country in the world, so nothing may happen. But the issue has come up before in what's known as the Rawls case, which concerned a wind farm in the state of Washington, which President Obama ultimately blocked, and he was sued because he blocked it. This was a Chinese case, not a Japanese case. And the Supreme, it went to the Supreme Court that decided that very clear. And the decision was, you knew what was going to happen because the statute was clear. The decision the president makes is not subject to judicial review explicitly. So there's no second guessing of what the president does. But what the Supremes also said was that the process is subject to judicial review. And there were some elements of the process by which the decision was made. And in the Rawls case, there were some elements of the process, namely the failure of the government to provide the acquiring party, in this case, the Chinese entity, the opportunity to review and refute the evidence that they were using for their decision. They were not given that opportunity. And so the court sort of sent it back. And I think the way it played out in the end is the government redid the process, came to the same conclusion. But it forced a change in the way the thing works. But it opened the door to what you could see here. You know, if the president weighs in advance of the process and puts a very big thumb on the scale, if I were the acquiring party, if I were Nippon, I would come back and say, wait a minute, can't do that. That's a violation of the law. I don't know that that gets them anywhere, because at the end of the day, if he blocks it, he blocks it. And there's no review after that. But it'll be messy. And it'll be uncomfortable. And for a president that has focused, in contrast to his predecessor, really on process and an orderly administration where things get, you know, debated at lower levels and they work their way up and there are memos that are carefully drafted and everything works, you know, the way it worked for 200 years, except for Trump. Well, not quite 200, but mostly 200, except for Trump. This is kind of a major process foul. And it surprised me when he did it. And the way he did it, what he ended up saying, I don't think is going to squeeze the company to make more concessions. I think it may discourage the company from going any further. In which case, where does that leave the workers? I think Scott's right. That
probably worse off.
If the FTC believes, Federal Trade Commission believes in what it says, it'll go after a Cleveland-Cliffs acquisition on antitrust grounds. Mm-hmm. So that leaves the workers with management that they don't like, and they've been public in not liking the current management. And so we're in the process of torpedoing alternatives that might be better. I mean, maybe they won't be. There's always a possibility. I'm less of in a rant mode than Scott is on this. I mean, to me, it's entirely possible that the company and the union can't come to terms.
Well,
and the union will oppose it, in which case.
Well, the deal may fall apart just on value basis, because Nippon Steel's offer is much higher than today's share price for U.S. Steel by about $10 a share.
Well, that's probably what it went down, 12% yesterday.
Yeah.
Rumors that the president was going to say something.
So
it'll probably go down further.
This is just vandalism. And it's difficult to watch it happen, because They had done a good job at the start and then decided to go get out the can of spray paint and, you know, tag God Bless America on the side.
Really
of the
on a rant
I don't
today.
Know what's going on.
Now, wait a minute. My son is a graffiti artist. Let's not talk about spray paint.
Hopefully the spray paint will be taken away by the time that the U.S.-Japan summit with Kishida, who's coming here pretty soon. How is this, might this affect the U.S.-Japan relationship? And I guess the broader question is does it send a signal to U.S. allies?
Yeah, I think so, unquestionably. I mean, I think that has something to do with the timing. They didn't want to do it while he was here. That would be a slap in the face. I think they didn't want it to be a lingering issue. So they needed to do it now if they were going to do it, to get it off the table. I mean, I would have looked at it differently, because since there has been the prospect that there might actually be a win-win outcome here, if the union decides they're getting a good enough deal, I would have waited to see that. But I think the answer to your question is, yeah, it's got to make relations with Japan more difficult. It's a slap in the face, really. And I mean, Scott already ranted on this once, so I defer to him to do it again. But I mean, the message to the other allies is, yeah, it's not an open investment climate like we've been arguing for hundreds of years.
It's worse than a catastrophe. It's a mistake. And one that they had done it right the first time and then came back to it and messed it up, which is, Yeah.
I think that's what Metternich said, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
All right, guys.
He was, by the way, he was also famous for seeing conspiracies and everything. When Talleyrand died in the middle of the Congress of Vienna, Metternich was informed, and Metternich's response is, what do you suppose he meant by that?
Wow. Okay. Guys, it has been a pleasure. We've talked about a lot today. I don't think we've solved any problems, but our listeners should definitely go look at Jim Lewis's piece on our website about TikTok.
Yes.
It's a quick read. It's, I think, 2 pages. Good read. Thanks to our listeners for bearing with us through all kinds of rants today. And guys, we'll see you next week.
Fair enough.
Excellent.
To our listeners, if you have a question for the Trade Guys, write us at tradeguys@csis.org. That's tradeguys@csis.org. We'll read some of your emails and have the Trade Guys react to it. You've been listening to The Trade Guys, a CSIS podcast.